Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos is daf Tzadi Hey. We're on Tzadi Dalet Madaf. We caught up a little bit yesterday, but just telling you right now, we're not going to do any catch up today, even though it looks like a shorter daf. But the degree of difficulty of this daf, we're going to today cover Tzadi Dalet, and then tomorrow we'll make a very concerted effort to catch up to where the rest of the world is at. We are in Tzadi Dalet Aleph, and we're starting towards the top of the Amud, starting with the words Amalei Rav Mordechai L'Rav Ashi. Before we go on, let's just take a quick recap of what we've been discussing over the past couple of days. You take a look at the last mission that we covered is Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph, and the mission over there discussed a series of tragedies that occurred. A woman goes and together with her, I'm sorry, a woman's husband goes away together with her son, and in that... In those travels, so reports about the death of her husband and her son, and the Mishnah described a number of scenarios, four different scenarios that mentioned the Mishnah regarding who died first, whether the woman did, whether the son did, whether the husband did, whether the son did, and the resulting effects of such a death. The Gemara yesterday in Sadi Gimel Amud Beis raised what seems to be a pretty fundamental question. We know that Eidus Isha, that the testimony allowing a woman to get married would work even if it's only one witness who came back and testified that her husband died, as we've been discussing since the beginning of the 10th Perek. Is the same thing true regarding the Mitzvah Yibum? Meaning that Eid Echad B'Yavama. Let's have one witness come back and say that her husband died and childless and there's a surviving brother. So would one witness allow for the mitzvah of Yibum? That question was raised back on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Aleph. Sorry, on Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis. And to that, the Gemara's answer was, it comes out to be no different. Now, our Mishnah kind of spoke to that idea. Our Mishnah, going back to Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph, described a scenario in where the report was is that your husband died and the son died, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibum. But let's say the report comes back that first the son dies and then the husband dies. So the Mishnah says, what do we do in such a circumstance? She does the mitzvah of Yibum. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe what happens after that point in time. Other witnesses came and other witnesses reported, but it seems pretty clear from our Mishnah that the mitzvah she does the mitzvah of Yibum. Why would it have been any different? Meaning, what was the Gemara's thought process in terms of making this case distinctive of any other case where one witness reports, and we normally give credibility to one witness? So the Gemara yesterday raised a fundamental issue. We know that one witness is believed, but why is one witness believed? That's one of the core issues that the Gemara dealt with yesterday. Is one witness believed because, again, just reviewing the basics, because it really is a fundamental point that was raised in the Gemara yesterday. Is one witness believed because for Eidus Isha, we basically gave him extra validity, right? What I described yesterday is like a super witness. In other words, we gave him extra validity. And on what basis do we give him extra validity? Because eventually, we're going to find out if he's telling the truth. Meaning, he's reporting somebody died. Eventually, what he said is going to be verified one way or another. Meaning, either the guy's never going to come back again, which means that he's right, or the guy's going to come back again, clearly showing that the guy's wrong and that he was a liar. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is why he's believed is because he should daiko mitzvah, because a woman herself is going to do the investigative work. She's going to, upon hearing that her husband died, she's going to do the investigation, and she herself is going to take some of the burden of that responsibility of determining whether her husband died square on her shoulders. The Gemara points out that if in the case of Yibum, we're relying heavily on Isha Daiko Mintzava, well, it's her brother-in-law. She knows her brother-in-law. She may not like her brother-in-law. Or just the opposite. It's her brother-in-law. She may like her brother-in-law. So therefore, the investigative work of the woman may not be satisfied under such circumstances. That is what the Gemara proposed yesterday as a possible distinction, and then the Gemara ends up on the side. Well, the Gemara doesn't end. Sorry, that's what we're in the middle of discussing right now, and we're going to continue that discussion. So we're on Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're continuing this discussion of the Gemara. We're starting with the words Amalei Rav Mordechai L'Rav Ashi.
It was a case where it's spoken when the husband comes back and said, but what happens when the son comes back? Does she have to go out for not Yibum?
Right.
Does she need a get?
Well, then there's no mitzvah of Yibum. So if there's no mitzvah of Yibum, so then there's no marriage. It's Eishasach.
So she doesn't need a get or anything.
Right? So it's an erva. So, right, she right, correct. She wouldn't need a get, and then the subsequent child would be a mamzer. Right. So, okay, good. That's what a lovely... lovely depiction, but that would seem to be, again, I'm just thinking it through, that would seem to be the conclusion. Don't you now you're asking me right. In other words, if her husband came back, she didn't do it. That means that she did not do her due diligence in terms of discovering the truth. And okay, and then we'll go back to the first Mishnah. Oh, what just happened over here? Yeah, Phil, this is your fault. Yeah, go ahead.
She doesn't like the brother-in-law, and she obviously will do a better investigation.
Correct. Okay, but the point the Gemara is making is that she likes him, she doesn't like him, meaning it'll influence her research. That's the Gemara's point, meaning that it's not, she won't be an objective participant in her remarriage, and she knows what she knows the next step, she knows what's coming, and that'll just influence her due diligence. Huh? So the simple answer is no. We saw this earlier in the Gemara, much earlier in the Masechta. There are circumstances where the brother-in-law is so patently incorrect for her. Right, the Gemara's example earlier was Mukashchin, but or the Gemara says that the Chachamim do advise, meaning that there is situations where the brother-in-law may be too old, too young. Okay, in other words, the simple answer is no, she can't refuse. Okay. Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, v'amalei la Rav Acha Rav Ashi Tashma. Ein ha'isha ne'emenes lomar meisi v'ami, she'en aseh, v'lo meisa achosi, she'ekanes l'beisa. A woman is not believed to say that my brother-in-law died, so that now I can get married, or that my sister died, so I can marry her husband. Okay. Like we already said earlier, but let's just say it again. A woman can come back from Medina Siam. She can come back from a trip abroad. She and her husband were there. And she can come back and she can report that her husband died. And she's going to be believed. Right? We'll see that later in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going to make that point very clear. Okay? And fine. And to that degree, she has credibility. But in terms of testifying about her brother-in-law, in terms of testifying that her sister died, and now she's allowed to marry her sister's husband, so to that degree, the Mishnah later on will tell us that she's not believed. So the Gemara says, okay, but what does that Mishnah indicate? That when the testimony is coming from her, she's not believed. He nihi delo mehemna. The Gemara now is making a dig in the Mishnah. Under such circumstances, she's not believed. Ha eda chad mehemman. So the Gemara says, obviously the Mishnah is telling us who's not believed in such circumstances, and then the inference is very simple. Well, if she's not believed in such circumstances, what we do, then we then know who is believed, and that would be eda chad. That would be one witness would believe under such circumstances. And so that would indicate that there is one witness who would be allowed to testify whether or not her yavam actually died. Ema stay for the Gemara says, okay, but from that Mishnah, let's not go crazy. Because let's go back to the Mishnah and let's look again. A man can't say that my brother is dead, so I therefore can do yibum to his wife. And a man is not believed to say that my wife is dead so that I can marry a sister. So the Gemara says, now, he's not believed. Now, what does that mean? That instead of him, let's substitute that with an Eid Echad. And the inference now, you want to make the same exact inference? Well, he's not believed, but one witness is believed. Now, Bishlam Agabi Isha Misha Miguna Akila Be Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, now look, when it comes to a woman, we understand that in the absence of testimony, we will accept one witness. And we don't need two when it comes to woman because of the problem of Iguna, of an Aguna. Meaning that the entire perek, our 10th perek of Yavamas, is predicated on the idea that there is a leniency when it comes to a woman that will allow her to remarry based on the testimony of one witness, because otherwise she's just going to be stuck the rest of her life. And so therefore...
But for the Yavam, though. Huh? It doesn't
work for the Yibum, but regular has. Wait, just one second. El Gabi Ish Michael Amemar. But when it comes to a man, what are you going to say? Meaning, as it relates to a man, there is no Aguna issue when it comes to a man. His wife goes away. His wife dies. In other words, we have Rabbeinu Gershom for the last 1,000 years. But let's, for the time being, ignore that. Let's go back to the Gemara. From the Gemara's perspective, okay, it's a tragedy. But he can marry. So there is no aguna issue when it comes to men. So, and what the Gemara now is essentially assuming is that obviously when the Mishnah says and a man can't report about the death of his either brother or his wife, that's because you can't substitute that with Eid Echad. A man's not believed, but Eid Echad is believed. It doesn't work that way with a man. By a woman, it's a fair diuk. By a man, it's not a fair diuk. So,
not an aguna. It's, huh? It's a yibum, she can marry somebody else.
Okay.
So she's not an aguna. She doesn't have to be an aguna. If you testify that her yibum died.
Right.
But she can marry somebody else. So she's not an aguna.
That's true, but again, her... Oh, just give me just one moment. So Elagabish Michael Amemar, Alaki Itzrich, Larabi Kiva Itzrich. So the Gemara says, okay, that Mishnah per se is not addressing, in other words, let's not go with the diuk of that Mishnah. The Mishnah over there is saying that when it comes to a woman is not believed to say that her Yavam died. A woman is not believed to say that that my sister died, and therefore I can marry her husband. Okay, and as far as the diuk of that Mishnah is concerned, so again, what did the Gemara want to do? It wanted to make an inference. Well, you see, in that Mishnah, the woman is not given credibility, but one witness is. That's what we wanted to do with that Mishnah. The Gemara says, let's not do that. Let's not make the diuk. And if we're not making the diuk, what's the purpose of the Mishnah? Meaning, if we're not going to make an inference, so then all we're left with is a point in the Mishnah. Well, what's the point? And Phil, this will address your question. Elaki itzrich la Rabbi Akiva itzrich. Saka dat chamina hol v'am Rabbi Akiva. Yesh mamzer mechai ve'lavin. So the Gemara says like this. Look, according to Rabbi Akiva, what exactly is the consequence of a woman who marries a man and the penalty is chayve lavin? According to Rabbi Akiva, the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. So ema chaysha akil kula. Now the next, the Gemara over here gets choppy in terms of the girsa. We're going to go with Rashi's girsa. And I say Rashi's girsa, mind you, the Rashi has two girsas. We're not going to go through the second girsa of Rashi, which happens to be what pretty much is written on the daf. We're going to go with Rashi's first girsa, which he prefers. So we're going to go, right now we're just going to go with Rashi's first girsa. And that is as follows. Ema chaysha kil kula. Look, according to Rabbi Kiva, what would happen if a woman, again, what is she right now? She is a yavama. And right now she is beholden to her yavam. She's a shomer's yavam. So, and her inability to marry another man is predicated on the fact that her yavam is alive. What does she want to do? She wants to testify that her yavam is dead. I mean, she wants to. Meaning she thinks her yavam is dead. And right now she's the only one with that information. Okay, and she comes back and she reports, my yavam is dead. Now, she remarries on the basis of that piece of information, that testimony. So what's the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is she's violating a law in the Torah. The Torah says, Lo siya eishas ameis hachutz lizar. So she violates a law. According to Rabbi Akiva, what does that create when she marries another man? It creates a mamzer. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is as follows. Here's the point the Mishnah is making. Normally, when a woman is afforded credibility over the death of her husband, do you know why she's afforded credibility? Because think of the consequences. Let's say she's lying. Let's say she's not telling the truth. Let's say her husband comes back. So in addition to her becoming forbidden to the man that she now is married to, on top of that, her children are going to be mamzerim. If she goes back to the first husband, those children by penalty are going to be mamzerim. Meaning the penalties are going to be so severe that she is afforded that extra credibility. Going back to what we said earlier this morning, Isha Daiko Minstava, meaning we assume that she's going to do the investigative work because the penalties are so severe. What the Gemara now is saying is, excuse me, I might have thought the same thing. According to Rabbi Akiva, when a woman is a Shomer Yavam, and she's reporting that her brother-in-law is dead, not her husband, her brother-in-law is dead, so according to Rabbi Akiva, here's what I might have thought. Let's extend to her that same credibility. Why? Because think of the penalties. Think of the consequences. She's going to go and she's going to marry another man and they're going to produce mamzerim. And she obviously she's not going to want that. So because on the other side of her telling the truth, if she were to tell a lie, the penalties would be so severe. Again, it would give her that, it would extend to her that extra credibility, and therefore we would believe her. The Gemara says that's the point of the Mishnah. The Havamina in the Mishnah would have been, I mean, without the Mishnah, the Havamina would have been that according to Rabbi Akiva, let's believe her. Because the children are going to be mamzerim if she's lying. So the Gemara says, and again, we're going to take out the word dezara. Again, we're going with Rashi's first girsa, v'daika, and therefore she'll do the correct investigation. Kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's the chiddush. The chiddush is no, that even according to Rabbi Kiva, in such a case, we don't give her that extra credibility. Gemara doesn't explain why. We can certainly theorize in terms of why. But in other words, even according to Rabbi Akiva, we don't afford that extra credibility, and therefore, is what it sounds like from the Gemara is that she is not believed. That's what the Mishnah says. She's not believed under such circumstances. Okay, where does all this bring us to? Again, we're back to the basic question. We know that a witness can testify that her husband's dead. She can remarry based on the testimony of that one witness. That's what we've established already from the beginning of the parak. The question on the table is, what about Yibum? Can we also extend that same credibility when it comes to the mitzvah of Yibum? So Rava Amar Eidecha Neman Bivama Mikava Chomer. So Rava says, as far as one witness for Yibum, he says we are going to believe it, and let's build it based on a kav v'chomer. And the kav v'chomer will go like this: le'isa kari sitarta, le'isa lav l'kol shekein. Look, based on the testimony of one witness, what are you allowing her to do? Meaning, go back to the beginning of the parak. What you're allowing her to do is marry another man. If she is married, what kind of prohibition are we talking about? It's a kares. It's an erva, meaning she's married, and if the one witness who comes back and reports that her husband's dead, if he's not telling the truth, if she doesn't do her due diligence in terms of an investigation, she is violating an issur kares. And yet, despite all that, the kav v'chomer, we'll get to the kav v'chomer in just a moment. Despite all that, we are allowing her to marry based on the testimony of one witness. Now let's go to Yibum. In the case of Yibum, so once again, what's happening is that she's a Shomer Yavam. Her brother-in-law now is going to do the mitzvah of Yibum, or at least needs to do the mitzvah of Yibum. Now there's one witness reporting that he's dead. One witness reporting that he's dead. So what is that allowing her to do? Marry another man. What kind of avera is that? If the witness is lying, that's a law. That's a negative prohibition. If here comes the kav v'chomer, if one witness gives her the credibility to marry an issur kares, so kav v'chomer, one witness should allow her to violate an issur lav. That's the Gemara's kav v'chomer. To which the Gemara says, "Issur kares, itar to issur lav kol koshken." I'm lehomer rabban l'rava he atzma tochir. So again, it's a kav v'chomer. It's a logical argument. The Gemara says, "Good, logical argument. You can challenge it." Till issur kares, itar to issur lav lo itarta. So you allow her to violate nisur kares. So le'isur lav lo itarta ve'ele'i ma'itam lo mehemna. So the Gemara says, okay, why don't we use that kal v'chomer as it relates to her herself? Meaning, let's use the exact logic when she's reporting about the death. So dekevin dezimna desanya lo daiko minstava. So the Gemara says, and I'll tell you why we don't use the same logic as it relates to her. She comes back and she says her husband's dead. Gemara says, okay, she's believed. Again, we'll see that Mishnah later on. She's believed over the testimony, over her own testimony, that her husband's dead. What if she came back and reported that her brother-in-law's dead? Gemara says she's not believed. And why not? Because the Gemara says, because it's very fair to surmise that she's not giving an objective report. She's saying her brother-in-law's dead because, goodness gracious, she does not like that man. She knows exactly who he is. She has no interest in being with that man. She does not want to spend the rest of her life with that man. And so therefore, She'll come up with a story that he's dead. So Edachanami tikem dezimna desanyulei lo daiko mitzvah. So the Gemara says, so if that's true regarding her, that's also true regarding Edachad. Because again, what's Edachad? Edachad is in of itself not the source of the credibility. It's coupled together with the fact that the woman's going to do investigation. If we're talking about her husband, fine, she'll do the investigation. She doesn't want her husband dead, so she'll do the investigative work. But when it comes to her brother-in-law, who the Gemara now is suggesting she may not want, so much like she's not believed about the death of her brother-in-law, Eidechad is also not going to be believed because of the death of the brother-in-law, because she's going to have to do the investigative work, and it's fair to surmise that she may not be doing the investigative work. So the Gemara seems to conclude that as it relates to the Yavam, so she's not believed, that the Mishnah says, and one witness also is not believed. Okay, so the Gemara ends off with lack of clarity, meaning differing viewpoints in terms of whether one witness is believed regarding the Yavam. Mind you, by the way, before we move on in the Gemara, there really were two issues that were discussed in the Gemara, and I'm not sure if I made it clear to delineate between the two issues. Issue number one, which was on Sadi Gimel Amud Beis, was the question of Eid Echad B'Yavam Amahu. That was the question of, one witness reported that her husband's dead. Are we going to allow her to do the mitzvah of Yibum based on one witness? Here in this discussion of the Gemara, it really was a question of, is one witness going to be able to report that her brother-in-law died, allowing her to be released from the mitzvah of Yibum? So they really are not the same. It's not exactly the same discussion, but the Gemara on whether she should do Yibum as a result of the one witness, the Gemara said yes. On the issue of whether to release her from the mitzvah of Yibum based on the testimony of one witness, so that the Gemara had two different viewpoints. Either Rava had a Kal V'Chomer, if one witness can allow her to violate Nisr Kares, one witness can allow her to violate Nisr Lav, Yivam L'Shuk, that's one viewpoint, or the Gemara brings in another viewpoint, which is no. She's not afforded credibility on her brother-in-law because she may hate him. One witness is not afforded credibility for the death of her brother-in-law for the same reason, because she may end up hating her brother-in-law. So the Gemara on this point does not resolve. Okay.
That
will create a gooder situation. Again, the gooder situation is not created. The gooder situation is there. It's just now a question of, is there a way of getting her out of the Aguna situation? Right, that's right. The Rambam sides with Rava's argument. He sides with Rava's Kal V'Chomer. She would, in other words, one witness could report the death of her brother-in-law. Let's move along. Rav Yehuda Marav is very critical about the drasha of Rav Elazar ben Maaseiah. Okay, you find this in the Gemara, but not that often, where an Amora speaks so critically about a Tana. I don't know where else. Where's the precedent for this, where you have such a critical viewpoint? Again, let's review. The last point in the Mishnah, we're back on Sadi Bezim and Aleph. The Mishnah, the tail end, brought in the opinion of Rav Elazar ben Maaseiah. The Pasuk says, Isha Grusha Miisha, that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. That's the Pasuk. Good. Parsha Zamor. So and Rav Elazar ben Maaseiah says, and how do we darshan that Pasuk? If a woman did not receive a divorce from a man, so a Kohen's allowed to marry her. Which, in the out of context, you're like, okay, that sounds pretty obvious. But in the context of the Mishnah, though, it makes sense. Meaning that the Mishnah's point was she received kiddushin from somebody after a report that her husband's dead, and it turns out that her husband wasn't dead. So the Mishnah's point is that she's not married to the second man, and even if she received a get from the second man, that's nothing because it's not her husband. You only become a Surah Lakohen, you only become a Grusha when you accept a get from your husband, not from a man. Okay. So even in context, it's still kind of like, okay, we knew that already. But okay, but the Gemara says, and now, again, Rav Yehuda Merav is critical. He says that Rav Elazar ben Maaseiah had a great opportunity to darshan the Pasuk, and he could have darshaned it positively, and he went in the other direction. He darshaned it negatively. So and how would he have darshaned it? V'darsh bechaspa. He had a pearl, and instead of finding a pearl, he found a piece of pottery, a shard. So my Marganisa, and the Gemara says, now what could we have done? Titania, the Gemara quotes the Brisa of Isha, Grusha, Misha, if a woman is divorced from a man, Afilo Nisgarsha, Ella, Mi Isha, Psula Lakuhuna. Even if she's only divorced from her husband, she's still going to be disqualified for kahuna. Vayinu Reich HaGet, the Posel B'Kahuna, and this is the idea of Reich HaGet. I'm going to explain this quickly, but when you give a get to a woman, I'll explain this quickly. When you give a get to a woman, so you have to write the get with no strings attached. Okay, the severance of a man and a woman through a get has to be a severance. It has to be a clean break between the man and the woman. Let's say he writes a get with a whole bunch of strings attached. So let's say, for example, you know, I'll divorce you, but with the condition that as long as this divorce is only going to be binding, and you cannot marry a single man that lives in South Florida. That's not a get. Okay, that does not have the validity of a get. In other words, that does not create a severance between the man and the woman. The get has to say, "At mutar sechol adam," you will be permitted to any man you want. Okay, obviously not his relatives excluded, but okay. But in other words, any man that you're permitted to, you are free and clear to marry whoever you want. That's the very definition of a get. And if he writes a get with strings attached, it's not a good get. And the drasha now is that even though it's not a good get, reach haget, it still smells of a get, right? It's a concept we're going to see and get in time and again. But the Gemara just says over here that's the drasha that could have been darshan out from this pasuk, that even though the validity of the get is not good, but nevertheless it's enough of a get where it is a reach haget, as of a scent of a get, and the consequence of that would be what? Let's say the man dies and she's now a widow. Can she marry a kohen? No, she can't. She can't marry a Cohen. Why not? She's not a divorcee. The get wasn't a valid get. Yeah. True, the get wasn't a valid get, but still, Reach HaGet, it had the scent of a get. It had enough, how exactly to explain this unclear, it could be just a drasha, but it has enough of a validity in which she has the status of a grusha, and that now she's going to be disqualified for a Cohen. The Gemara here refers to it as Marganisa. This is a pearl. I understand from the woman's perspective, it's not such a pearl. It's not such a pearl. It's going to, now, this drush is going to prohibit her from marrying a Kohen. But again, though, in terms of a Chiddush HaKra, meaning from a standpoint of saying over a Chiddush, this is a much bigger Chiddush than what we said back in the Mishnah. We said back in the Mishnah, if a man who's not married to her hands her a get, that's nothing. That's obvious. So over here, we're going to say something now that's less obvious. Okay. No, it's not going to work. Meaning, the get's not going to work, but it has enough status that's going to disqualify her from kahuna. Okay. Next. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. This next bit of Mishnah and Gemara is complicated, admittedly. The first couple lines of the Gemara after we get through the Mishnah are going to be complicated, but okay. It's Yevamos, right? We had a lot of easy terrain last couple weeks. That's not totally true, but okay. But here's now where things get a little bit complicated. Let me just introduce this Mishnah with the following point. We've been discussing a lot the past 2 weeks since the beginning of the parak about this topic of a woman and her ability to remarry based on the testimony of one witness, and for good reason. Because generally speaking, we don't give one witness credibility. In this case, we do. And so therefore, it warrants a good discussion in the Gemara in terms of what exactly are the mechanics. Why is it that she's allowed to remarry based on the testimony of one witness? But as the Gemara pointed out, in the beginning, we're talking about Naguna. We're talking about a woman who will be stuck for the rest of her life, not being able to marry. And so therefore, the Chachamim gave her a special dispensation, a heter, to get married based on the testimony of one witness, for reasons which we discussed already for the past couple weeks. All right. What if it's the reverse? What if it's a woman who goes away and she now is missing? So can the husband remarry? The answer would be yes.
Can they have another one?
And right, and this
union.
Yeah, in other words, she didn't have to be reported missing for him to marry another woman. Okay, in other words, he can marry He can marry nearly anyone he wants, in addition to his wife. Okay, we talked earlier about financial consideration. Right here in Yevamos, we had a discussion of financially how many women can he handle. Also, from the mitzvah of Ona, there's also another issue in terms of how many wives he can handle. Nevertheless. It's not the aguna issue for the man, obviously, is not the same as the aguna issue for a woman. But, as Phil already figured out, right? In other words, as long as his wife is alive, he can't marry his sister-in-law. Okay? His wife's sister. Because a man's not allowed to marry, a man's not allowed to be married to two sisters. Okay, Yaakov was before the Torah was given. Okay, but the Torah says that a man can't marry two sisters. What would allow him to marry his sister-in-law, his wife's sister? So there, let's say it's simple. Now, I know later on in this daf, there's going to be a Rashi that's going to say that one witness would allow him to marry his sister-in-law. I know there's a Rashi that says that, but and I do this rarely, but let's ignore that Rashi. Okay, and full disclosure, meaning it happens to be that there is a Rashi that says that later on. Let's say simply, and this is how most Rishonim are going to say it, that a man cannot marry a sister-in-law until two witnesses come back and report that his wife is dead. Because otherwise, in other words, the only time that we have one witness as a special dispensation is for the woman, to allow her to remarry. But for a man...
What's his rush?
Right. What's his rush and...
Why is he limited only to her?
Can't marry somebody?
Right. Correct. Correct. There's simply not the aguna issue. Correct. Misha acha ishto lemedina sayam. Okay, so here the Mishnah is going to go the other direction, where his wife went away. Report comes back, and they say to him that his wife died. Now, again, from the language of the Mishnah, we never know. Right? We never know whether it's one witness reporting, two witnesses reporting, because the Mishnah consistently always says they came and they reported. But again, we already know from the first Mishnah that they does not have to mean one witness. That they doesn't have to mean two witnesses, that they can mean one witness. But here, let's say simply, two witnesses came back and reported that his wife has died. And so what did he do? Okay, so his wife died, so he married his wife's sister, which you're allowed to do. Meaning, it's the only erva where you're allowed to marry a relative after the death of the wife. Meaning, for all other arayos, the rule is once an erva, always an erva. Right? Your wife's daughter. Right? Not your daughter. Oh, could be your daughter as well, but your wife's daughter. Right? When your, God forbid, the wife dies, the daughter's still aster. She's an erva. Your daughter-in-law. Right? Your son dies, your daughter-in-law is always going to be prohibited. Once an erva, always an erva. And the only exception to that would be achos ishto. The sister of your wife. The sister of your wife becomes permitted through death. So, report came to him that his wife died. And again, just to say the Mishnah simply, two witnesses reported that his wife died. And so what he does is marry the sister. And now his wife comes back. Okay, so the reports of her death were highly exaggerated. So, muteris lachzor lo. So, he's allowed to go back to his wife. Right? The fact that he did sleep with his sister-in-law, we're going to call that anusa. Meaning, he did not intentionally have relations with an erva.
That she invited the guest. Nothing happened.
It's not like nothing happened, but no, there's no marriage.
Penalties?
No, in other words,
he shouldn't have married her.
He shouldn't have married.
Penalties for the sister.
Huh?
Penalties for the sister.
Like what? Well, hold on one second. So, Ishtar Muteris Lachzor Lo. So his wife can go back. His wife can go back to him. Umotah Bekrova Shniya. And as far as that second woman is concerned, now he had relations with her, obviously. But the Mishnah's point is going to be as follows. There is simply no institution of marriage that occurred between him and his sister-in-law. As long as his wife is alive, she to him is an erva. Now the Mishnah is about to reveal to us that if they had a child, obviously that child is a mamzer, okay, which is unbelievably unfortunate, but there simply was no marriage that occurred between him and his sister-in-law. Consequently, so Mota Bekrovishniya, he can marry the relatives of the sister. Now, you're going to, I know we're in Yevamos right now, you're going to have to concoct a scenario in which, right, you have a woman being related to the sister, but not to the wife. I don't,
parents.
What different parents? Okay, it's, We can get there. Let's just deal with the Mishnah conceptually. He's allowed to marry the relatives of the sister. Ushnia muteres bikrovav. The woman who had relations with him is allowed to marry his relatives. Again, the point the Mishnah is making is that there was no institution of marriage. The arayus is only created when there was a marriage between a man and a woman. If a man and a woman slept with one another, but there was no marriage, so then there are no arayos that are created. Right? The relatives of a woman you sleep with are not prohibited to you. Arayos are only created through the union of marriage, through the institution of marriage. So therefore, he's allowed to marry her relatives, she's allowed to marry his relatives, the Meisa Rishona Mutta B'Shnia, and the Mishnah makes this point even clearer. Let's say his wife actually dies. Meaning, after all this drama, the wife actually dies. Now, Mutta B'Shnia is allowed to marry his sister-in-law. But he illicitly slept with his sister-in-law, to which I'm speaking now simply halachically, it was a meaningless act. It didn't create an iser, him sleeping with his sister-in-law.
There's no penalty for the sister, just...
Well, again,
the sister is also relying on the news as well, not the husband. But, alone, I mean, both of them are relying on it. So the sister is also at fault, no?
But again, at fault of doing what? Meaning, what did she do? She didn't commit adultery.
No.
She's not married.
Based on two witnesses.
We'll get to in just a moment. This is where the Gemara is going to make things complicated. What if she was married? But right now, let's say our Mishnah simply: she was a penuya. She was a single woman. So again, the penalties that we described earlier in the first Mishnah are dealing with a married woman. The case of a married woman is, again, she now sleeping with another man. That's adultery. So, and that's why the penalties are so severe. Here, we're just talking about a man and a woman having relations. Again, it's brother-in-law, sister-in-law, but she's not married. Let's say it simply. She's not married. So now what? So they had illicit relations. Again, it's obviously that in of itself is, you know.
It's not a secret, correct.
And in the context of our Mishnah, we understand why it happened. But now that it happened, the point the Mishnah is making is that there was no institution of marriage. They were not married. All along, her sister was alive. So therefore, they were never married. So when the wife comes back, so again, leaving all the emotions aside, him and his wife can reunite. That's fine. And if consequently his wife dies, he can go back to the sister. Okay, again, that's a simple point in the Mishnah. Amar lo, back to the Mishnah. Amar lo meisa ishto. Okay, here we go now in the Mishnah. Another scenario, very similar. They say to him, his wife died. V'nasa so chosan, he married the sister. V'achar kach amar lo kayamt haisa umesa. And then, very similar to the previous Mishnah. Then they say to her, you know what? Here's the story. When we told you your wife was dead, we were wrong. Okay, second set of witnesses, or just whatever, a clarification. However it happened, they came back and reported to him, your wife wasn't dead when you first married her sister. She was actually alive, and then subsequently she died. Havlad rishon mamzer, the ha'acharon ein mamzer. So now as follows. So any children she has with her sister while the wife was alive, obviously, is a product of arayos, and therefore the child is a mamzer. Any child they have subsequent to the death of the wife is obviously not the product of arayos, and therefore the child is not a mamzer. Fine. Again, similar to the previous Mishnah. Again, this is not a penalty.
Any other man, she would not have any mamzer.
No, it's not a penalty on her. This is just the natural result of natural. It's a halachic result of having relations with a woman who's an erva. The child is a mamzer. That's not a penalty. I mean, it is a penalty, but I'm saying, but that's not specific to this case. That's true by any time a man has relations with an erva. The child is a mamzer. So if what was reported to him originally was that his wife was dead, and then he went with his sister-in-law and they had a child, and it turns out that his wife wasn't dead, child is a mamzer. For no other reason other than the relations that he had was an erva. Rabbi Yossi Omer kol sheposa yideacherim posa yideatzmo v'chol shein posa yideacherim ein posa yideatzmo. And then Rabbi Yossi makes a cryptic statement, which anything which is disqualified by others is disqualified by himself. Anything which is not disqualified by others is not disqualified by himself. And stay tuned, the Gemara later on is going to get, we're going to come back to discuss what exactly he was talking about.
this Mishnah seems to be not Rabbi Yossi. This Mishnah seems to be a cause of Rabbi Akiva.
Why? What?
Because he's having relations with his sister-in-law, and the child's a mamzer.
That's everybody.
But everybody will give him.
That's everybody. That's an Issachar race. Right, it's right. Sister-in-law is in the Parsha of Arayos. Okay, start with the Gemara. Now, here's where things get complex. Okay, up until now, it's not simple, it's not straightforward. But here's where things get complex. And the Gemara now is going to create a scenario in which it's basically going to make the same point as our Mishnah, but with just a couple more variables. But just to make sure that we totally see that his relations with the sister-in-law doesn't create Isser. Let's go like this. Okay, let's go like our case in our Mishnah, where his wife goes overseas, but now let's say it like this. Not only does his wife go overseas, but his brother-in-law goes overseas as well. Okay, the word giso, I don't know if we saw that word yet in the Masechta. Giso is a reference to one's brother-in-law, but brother-in-law specifically, where it's the husband of your wife's sister. Okay, anyone whose wife has a sister, and I mean, you don't want to really think about this in the context of your own family relationship. But again, it's very simple to think about Giso if you have a wife and she has a sister, and think of her husband. Okay, that's the definition of Giso. Now over here, what happened is that your wife, together with your brother-in-law, went abroad. Okay. But again, it's basically the same thing as our Mishnah, but the complexity over here is going to be the added variable of your sister-in-law was married. Okay. Avagav da'asa v'ishto gisal medinas yam. So, da'ahani hani nisuin, de kemitzri eshes giso, agiso, afilo hachi, eshes giso asiri, ishto sharya. Now, a report came back that they both died. And here's that Rashi that we'd like to ignore, although it's hard to ignore. Rashi says, what kind of report came back that they died? One witness came back and reported that they died. Now, I know it's a little bit tricky because...
The one witness applies to the sister-in-law, not to him, though.
I'd like to say that. Rashi doesn't sound that way from Rashi.
But I mean, it should. I mean, that's the whole.
I'm with you. I'm not only with you, right? The Rishonim were with you. Tosis over here is with you. Okay. Again, I'm just showing you where the tricky parts are to this discussion. But let's assume that one witness came and reported that the reported to your sister-in-law that her husband died. And a report came back to you saying that your wife died. And again, just to make it simple, let's say that two came back to say that your wife died and one came back to report that to the sister-in-law that her husband died. Okay, so now in this little soap opera that we created, so, huh? Let's deal with the point that the Gemara wants to make. And that is as follows. In this little soap opera that we created, so now the brother-in-law and the sister-in-law get married. Fine. And then everybody comes back. Okay. I know, this is, I understand. You can. Okay. Everyone comes back. The point the Gemara wants to make is as follows. Let's first start from the perspective of the woman. Okay? Where her husband now has come back. So again, if all this was done through Eid Echad, so what are the penalties? Go back to the beginning of the Perek. Penalties are, right, she's got to get a divorce from her current husband, who is not her husband. She's got to get a divorce from her previous husband, who actually is her husband. And take the mizeh, mizeh, etc., etc. Meaning, she goes back, we go back to the first Mishnah. That's from her perspective. Now let's go from the man's perspective. From the man's perspective, where, again, let's say it simply, he remarried based on the testimony of two witnesses that told her that her wife is dead, and therefore he ended up marrying his sister-in-law. So from his perspective, he can take back his wife. And here in this situation, you could have made the following argument. You could have said, how unusual that when, in this scenario, where I had a subsequent marriage based on the reports of the death of these two people, meaning the man's wife and the man's brother-in-law, were reported dead. And so then he marries his sister-in-law. And now they both come back in. His sister-in-law is going to have to suffer all the penalties described earlier because she got remarried based on the testimony of one witness. He, on the other hand, doesn't have to separate from his wife and divorce his wife. And the Gemara says, and you might have thought, lo amrinan. Now let's go back to the Gemara. We don't say mitoch shenazra eshes giso, agiso, te'aser ishto alecha. So you might have thought, well, in these circumstances, shouldn't the penalties and the fate of the two be tied hand in hand? And the Gemara says that's the point. They're not necessarily tied hand in hand. We treat each marriage separate based on their respective halachas. And we don't look at, even though it's one marriage that's going to have to be affected, but each partner is going to be looked at with their respective halachas. The woman who remarried based on the testimony of one witness, we go back to the first Mishnah of the 10th Perek. The man who marries his sister-in-law based on the testimony of, let's say it simply, not like Rashi, and based on the testimony of two witnesses, so he can take back his wife, even though he had relations with his wife's sister, based on this Mishnah. And we don't say, well, I don't understand, there was one marriage, wasn't it? The Gemara says, no, we don't say that. Each partner in the marriage is going to be treated with their respective halacha. That was, admittedly, the tricky part of today's daf, and that's why I knew we weren't going to get very far today. Let's again. I'm going to. That's a simple way to say it.
But does it matter how many witnesses the husband gets?
What does it matter?
Yeah.
Meaning, the simple shot would be that if it were one witness coming back saying that his wife is dead, he can't marry his sister-in-law.
Right. Oh, I see.
Okay. And again, it goes back to the point that because the woman is given that extra. That extra leniency of being able to marry one witness, so on the other side of that is going to be all the penalties if, in fact, the one witness is wrong. Okay, we go on in the Gemara. Let's do a little bit more for today. Lema masis nilo Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara says, let's suggest that our mission is not going like Rabbi Kiva. Di Rabbi Kiva havile achos grusha so. The Gemara says that according to Rabbi Akiva, she would be the wife of your sister. She would be, I'm sorry, the divorcee's sister. To explain this just a little bit better and to do this quickly, we learned earlier, a man has relations with an erva, there's no get. Right? There's no marriage, there's no get. A man sleeps with, again, Rahman al-Islam, God forbid, just making the point. A man sleeps with his mother, right? He's not going to give her a get. That's not an institution of marriage. There's no marriage. There's no marriage, there's no get. And we noted that there's one notable exception where a man's going to give a woman a get, even though it was an erva, and that would be the first mission of the Perek. In the first mission of the Perek, what happened? A woman remarried based on testimony of one witness. Her husband comes back. The second marriage is not a marriage, and yet he has to give her a get. Okay, that's an exception. The rule is, however, is that when a man sleeps with an erva, there's no get. Good. That's the rule. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Akiva, there are two more exceptions where if a man sleeps with an erva, he's got to give her a get. What are those two exceptions? His sister-in-law and his mother-in-law. Let's see this inside. And the reasons why, we're going to explain. D'tanya, we learned in a braisa, call er araisha batari and tzrichas amen again. If a man sleeps with an erva, he doesn't give her again. Chutz me'eshes ish, and he says, I'll be based in. And the exception would be when a man sleeps with a woman, a man sleeps with a married woman, and he did so based on the testimony of one witness. Where again, it's adultery, but he's going to give her a get. Fine. Rabbi Akiva Mosif of Eshes Ach V'Achos Isha. Now Rabbi Akiva is going to add two to the list, and that is the wife of your brother and Achos Isha and your sister-in-law, right? Your wife's sister. Where under those circumstances, if a man sleeps with either of those women, he's got to give her a get. Now, without any explanation whatsoever, it sounds strange. Why should they be different? Right now, we'll leave out an explanation. We'll just simply say the facts as they are. Rabbi Kiva requires a get under those circumstances. They came and dam Rabbi Kiva by again. Mimele, it's the Re'alad, Avile Echos Grushaso. So now the Gemara is going to ask a simple question. I mean, it's simple if you just accept the facts. Mm-hmm. The fact is that according to Rabbi Kiva, a man sleeps with his sister-in-law, he's got to give her a get. Okay, so now, let's go back to our Mishnah. What happened to our Mishnah? Man was given the report that his wife died. Okay, he slept with his sister-in-law. Okay, what did the Mishnah say? If his wife comes back, he takes back his wife. According to Rabbi Akiva, he can't. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, he's got to give his sister-in-law a get. So what is his wife? The wife is a sister of his grusha. Okay, that's the question. The Gemara says, and all the Gemara is suggesting right now is our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Akiva, which, as we know, would not be the end of the world.
What's the basis for giving her a gift?
Yeah, agreed. Meaning, we haven't clarified that point. So the Gemara says, "V'lav itmar la merav gidam rabbi chia bar Yosef amarav hayeshazach echidami kigon." I would say, you know what? Let's do the following. Okay, let's pause over here. I know, in the middle of a sentence. Okay, let's pause over here. So tomorrow what we'll do is we'll clarify. We'll clarify why exactly a get is required for those two according to Rabbi Akiva. And then we're going to clarify that our Mishnah could in fact be going like Rabbi Akiva and does not have to be going against Rabbi Akiva. Okay, we'll make those clarifications tomorrow.